Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it is going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you of the views that are expressed here, and not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views and the views of our guests. And this evening I have one of my favorite guests, John Clark. He's been with us before. But before we get to him, I just wanted to comment. You know, it was Edward Bernays and you who said many years ago, 1928, in his book Propaganda, and certainly Edward Bernays was the father of modern-day propaganda and the techniques that are used to mold the minds of everybody out there in the audience. And he said, you know, we're governed. Our minds are molded, our tastes are formed, our ideas suggested largely by men we have never heard of. And this was called to mind as I was watching the evening television news, and they're talking about all the people who just don't have any health insurance in America, and the terrible problems, 46 million Americans don't have any health insurance, and we're having an increasing number of articles talking about people going overseas to get medical care. At one time, we had the finest health care system in America, and nobody went out without care. We had a county hospital system where people who were indigent or had reduced income could get good health care. Every single county in the United States. And the federal interference in this program has driven prices up. I can remember when a hospital room was $13 a day. Now it's $5,000 a day, and you're lucky to get a meal with it. You're never going to get a back rub. What they have done is they've destroyed this system, and they're going to make it even worse with more government interference. But notice how television and the various things you're reading in the newspaper are being utilized to manipulate your reality. And you remember, of course, we told you before the election that they were manipulating the price of gasoline down so you'd be happy at the time of elections. Have you noticed what's happened to the price of gasoline since the elections last Tuesday? And now we see them beginning to go up again. Oh, shucks, you really believe that is just happening by accident? Everything that goes on is aimed at manipulating you and creating your reality and altering your perception of what's going on. The media doesn't ever talk about the important things and emphasizes many times the unimportant things, unless, of course, it's new legislation they want to get through to build support for a socialized medical system. And if that comes about, you better be able to go to another country, because you're not going to be able to get adequate health care here. They're going to be able to ration health care here as they do in Canada and every other country with socialized medicine. And you know, a lot of people will go along with it because they think you get something for nothing. Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, there's no free lunch. And the life that may be lost may be that of a loved one or your own. Socialized medicine is the worst possible system. A free health care system we once had and was destroyed by the socialists. And believe me, some of them are very powerful, very wealthy. Why? Because they want to be able to control you. Socialism is a sincere, idealistic theory, but it doesn't work without force. Somebody's got to be in charge. And believe me, they're not going to redistribute the wealth of the wealthy. It's going to be your wealth. They're going to wipe out the middle class, impoverish the middle class, and bring about a two-tiered system like they have in Mexico, which we are in the process of joining together with. And, of course, one thing that is going to come out of this election is the fact that now President Bush is going to be able to get through the amnesty legislation he's been trying to get all along. Even though he says, I'm against amnesty, he's pushing the amnesty legislation, and with the help of the Democrats, he'll get it through and bring in another 20 or maybe even 30 million illegal immigrants into this country and create a multicultural and multilingual society and basically undermine the very fabric of our society. Well, I'm going to be quiet, and we're going to talk to our special guest this evening, John Clark. John, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, it's always a pleasure, and we're going to be talking this evening about two pieces of legislation that were passed last month. You probably haven't heard too much about, but you certainly should know about, because they're going to influence everybody in the listening audience. Well, John, why don't you pick up the story you were going to tell us tonight about the Military Commission Act and the John Warner Defense Authorization Act of 2007. What's this all about?
Well, I think time will tell exactly what it's all about. And some people have asked me and poo-pooed the threats about these acts and said, well, the government won't really use them this way against us. Isn't this a lot of conspiracy theorist paranoia? Well, it seems that there's a very clear pattern here in this administration being carried forward, and now by these acts that were pushed through on the eve of him losing the political power that he might otherwise need to achieve them. I can't believe the Democrats went along with it. I say I can't believe it. I argue in my book, as you know, that neither of these parties has served the American people for decades now, so it shouldn't be that much of a shocker. But it seems that there'd be at least some voices of complaint. So these acts seem to, especially when combined with other acts by the federal government, not just confined to this administration, but including acts by this administration like the USA Patriot Act, and then we have the record of this administration in not liking whistleblowers, calling attention to what this government is doing, whether it's Abu Ghraib or wiretapping or Joseph Wilson trying to warn us about the lack of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. We see a pattern of increasing federal domination of our lives. And I had mentioned to you, Doctor, that last week I read something that just seemed to me to come out of something even more surreal than a George Orwell novel. They say truth is stranger than fiction. And apparently, this was in the Christian Science Monitor, I believe last Wednesday, but I'm not sure which day, but I've read it in other news sources as well. Apparently, the administration is moving through the Justice Department to stop a detainee from expressing how it was that he was tortured. That is, the detention methods, the interrogation methods being used by the administration are being called secrets, and the administration is moving to in a court right now to prohibit him speaking to anyone about the methods used, not even his lawyer. Now, this is right out of, and you'll recall, I am an attorney. We are trained in the Constitution. We believe that it is the foundation, we are lawyers, of our laws in America. Of course, we Christians look at God's authority as being the highest, and that hopefully being embraced somewhat by our Constitution. But I never thought I'd see the day that we would in this country have a government trying to make it illegal for someone who was the victim of extreme interrogation measures to talk about it. And it seems to me that that's just one more indication of how far this administration will go.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment, John. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is John Clark, and John is a lawyer. He contracted Lyme disease, which is one of this is myriad of new diseases. In fact, of course, the first case of Lyme disease occurred in a place called Lyme, Connecticut, just across the straits from Plum Island, which where they had experimental, where they were creating all sorts of terrible new diseases for biological warfare. That was, of course, 25 years ago. Since then, you know, about a million Americans now have Lyme disease. And, of course, it's very difficult to get it treated if you have the disease because pressure is put on the doctors who try to help the patients with this. Well, John, of course, you know, coming from a legal background, totally disabled, I mean, really the point of hopelessness. I mean, how long were you sick, John, before you started to get better?
Well, it's ironic that you should ask that. I just went down to Dartmouth-Hitchcock Hospital, the Hanover, New Hampshire today, to meet with my physician as I continue to treat with this illness. And it's been about 9 years now. Of course, it may have been sleeping in my system longer. I've only recently been reading some of the information you're alluding to, and it does seem that there's a clear pattern here of perhaps the government let the lid off of Pandora's box with this ailment.
Well, not only this, but the chronic fatigue and, of course, fibromyalgia, the new AIDS epidemic, certainly the a whole flock of new deadly diseases, this mycoplasma, which really was never a factor until, about 1980. When a genetically modified form of mycoplasma began creating pneumonia and, of course, involved with many of the people with AIDS and, of course, involved with chronic fatigue syndrome, a genetically modified form of the disease. Looks like it came out of a laboratory, but we're not going to talk about that tonight. We're going to talk about John's of response out of the despair that came with having this terrible disease. He eventually became a Christian. He's written a wonderful book. We've interviewed him on in the past called Christian Words and Christian Actions. And it's really talking about the current administration. But let me point out, there's corruption in both administrations. It is simply that the current administration has passed a series of bills. Immediately after 9-1-1, certainly not only the shock of 9-1-1, but then the unexplained anthrax attack on America, where a number of anthrax-laden letters were sent to Democratic senators. Isn't that interesting? Just the Democratic senators and Democrats, and of course a few other people who had spoken out against government policies, and of course we know that they knew about it, because on the evening of September 11th, why, the Vice President, the White House staff, and presumably the President started on Cipro, which is specific for anthrax, and about 2 or 3 weeks later the anthrax attack came. They knew it was going to happen. But nobody's ever raised the question, how did they know that was going to happen? Because I think most of us, the first thing from our mind was an anthrax attack. Well, anyway, of course, as a result of that, they got through the Patriot Act and the Office of Homeland Security Act and the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, and more recently, the Military Commission Act, and, of course, the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act. And this is what John's going to be talking about this evening, this legislation that gives dictatorial powers to the President. In fact, Senator Leahy has said that this legislation will actually encourage the President to declare martial law. And people say this could never happen in America, and I'm sure the Japanese back in 1941 said this could never happen. They'd never go around rounding up Americans and put them into concentration camps. We're loyal Americans, you know. We're American citizens. We've been here for 2 or 3 generations. But they found, much to their dismay, that when you have people in positions of power who have no respect for our Constitution, they, of course, lost their citizenship. Not only that, but the land was seized from them, their property was seized from them, they were never compensated for it. Why? Because they were Japs, and we were at war with the Japs. And, well, I'm going to let you pick up the story, John. Why are you concerned about this new legislation? In fact, this whole menagerie of legislation that seems to be intent upon destroying the very foundation of our constitutional guarantees of freedom.
Well, I suppose I might answer a question with a question, which is, why aren't more Americans outraged and concerned?
I don't think that they really understand what's going on. I think that they find it impossible to believe that we could ever lose our freedom. After all, we're Americans.
Well, Thomas Jefferson, amongst others, warned us that the democratic structures that they were creating would not function with an ignorant populace. And I don't want to sound judgmental or harsh, but the majority of Americans don't know what habeas corpus is. They don't know what posse comitatus is. And they don't appreciate, therefore, the significance of these protections being lifted. Ultimately, many of them trust their government. They trust their media. And as you point out correctly, sir, the media is deceiving us. The government is deceiving us. Here I have an illness very probably released into our population by our government trying to tamper with God's creation for its horrible purposes of warfare. And now, of course, maybe the greater problem or sin in that is not so much it's releasing those microbes, but in its response. As you point out, many doctors trying to treat people like me are being discouraged by the CDC and the federal government, which doesn't seem to want to recognize how much of an epidemic this is. I did, incidentally, get my illness Connecticut, in eastern Connecticut. And now we're going to trust this government to tell us that it has vaccinations that it's going to compel us to take. The most recent law, the John Warner Defense Authorization Act, from what I've seen of it, does not specifically address vaccinations. But because it does specifically address epidemics, and it does specifically give the president power to restore public order and, quote, enforce the laws of the United States, when we couple it with the other laws of this administration, particularly the USA Patriot Act, which specifically addresses quarantines, and we look at the past here of the anthrax and other scares, whether or not orchestrated or with the foreknowledge of this government, it seems pretty clear that this legislation is anticipating either some kind of a flu or other epidemic or the threat of one, and is going to employ that to impose order, quote-unquote, upon us.
For any of our listeners who think that what we're talking about, the possibility that somebody in government could have created new and terrible diseases, we have a book we carry. It's written by one of the country's leading scientists. His name is Dr. Garth Nicholson. He had two professorships at MBA Anderson Clinic. He's written over 600 peer-reviewed articles. The book is called Project Daylily. We carry the book. We think it's important. It's based upon his experiences. It's fact, but it's written as fiction so we wouldn't get sued, about how the government has created new diseases that are plaguing our people. And, of course, he was forced to leave MB Anderson Clinic after several people very close to him were murdered. You say this couldn't really go on in America. The book reads like a Tom Clancy novel. The only trouble is Tom Clancy's novels are based upon fiction. This is based upon fact. So you need to get the information. You need to find out if it's true, and we have so many other books going into this. The origin of the AIDS epidemic, which nobody knows where it came from, but we can assure you that it was not a program for killing off large numbers of people. Well, anyway, let's get back, to this legislation. Now, we know, for instance, in the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, which is supposedly laid out by the government but was to be enacted at the state levels, and many states did, there's a place there for forced, you know, vaccination. There's also places where they talk about the ability to come in. If you have food stored, taking it away. If you have gasoline, taking it away, taking away your car, and rounding people up and putting them into detention camps. And we know that Halliburton's been given $385 million to build detention camps. Why would they give Halliburton $385 million to build detention camps in America? And if you're out in the listening audience, you find that difficult to believe. Let me suggest you go to Google and you type in Halliburton, $385 million, detention camps. If what we're saying is not true, why, you can easily disprove it. You have nothing to worry about. But what we're saying is true. You need to find out, and you need to help us get the information out. Well, I know you share my concern, John. Well, tell us, though, when the trouble is that most Americans refuse to believe that there could be anything malicious in our leadership. They think this is all being done to protect us from the wicked Osama bin Laden, who's probably been dead for a year or two, but that doesn't matter. You know, we have to have a boogeyman, and we have to give the government all the power to protect us from the wicked Osama bin Laden.
Well, that seems to be the modus operandi, particularly of the current administration, but not limited there, too. It strikes me as particularly odd that Americans would continue to trust this government when it's well known that this government has engaged in activities in the past contrary to their interests, like deliberately exposing servicemen to nuclear contamination or overthrowing foreign governments and lying to us about it for many decades. It is interesting to me as a Christian, and by the way, I would say that I could very well thank our government for releasing this pathogen in my case because it brought me to a faith that I never had. And that may sound ironic, but that's Romans 8:28-29. God would use those things that we would perceive to be evil to bring us to his glory. And without this illness, I wouldn't be walking the journey I am right now. So, at any rate, that's an aside. But it seems to me, now that I am a man of faith, that we're looking at a nation right now where it's very clear that we're losing power, and that we're going to put our faith in God, or we're going to put it in the government that has repeatedly betrayed us.
Well, I think it's a point very well taken, and of course, I myself became a Christian because I recognized it was a threat to our society. Fortunately, I didn't have an illness like you did, but I recognized that our society itself was sick, and we were going to lose our freedom, but that was 44 years ago when I got started. But it's good to have you on board with us, John. And, of course, John has analyzed, of course, read through this legislation, the Military Commission Act and the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act are frightening pieces of legislation. To do away with the right of habeas corpus, to justify torture, we should all be concerned. Well, John, go ahead and pick up the story.
Well, we were talking about particularly whether Americans should be trusting their government. It strikes me that many Americans are being forced to choose between core belief systems. For some Americans, they don't believe in God. So what are they to put their faith in but the monetary system and the political structures of America? It seems to me that as their political structures are shown to be failures for whatever reason, that they do not have another man-made structure to resurrect the failed American governmental system. And for them, that will be very terrifying. For those of us that put our faith in Christ, we know that only upon His return will we have a government that we can truly trust. The interesting thing to me is how many American Christians have wed the two together and perceive their government to be serving God and seem to have wedded Caesar in a way. They are in a particular crisis because they are being asked to choose between belief systems, because the belief system of the government to be trusted and put their faith in their government and to follow its rules is increasingly in direct conflict with the higher authority of our God. And the use of torture, as you point out, is unacceptable for Christians. The war in Iraq cannot be defended in Christian doctrine, and that debate has not even been had in this country. As you know, Doctor, my book is not really about George Bush. It's about America and America's Christians. And when we call ourselves a Christian nation, are we spreading Christ's truth to the world, or is Islam growing because of our hypocrisy and because we have wedded our faith to our government worldly structures? We have to choose, and the choice is very clear, and it becomes increasingly more clear as our government moves to do things like compel us to take inoculations against diseases that they fabricate and tell us to trust them when they can take our gasoline and our food and our cars, as you correctly point out, and tell us to trust them when they're the ones who have released these pathogens that they now say they'll protect us from, when they have released these terrorists or created these terrorist threats that they tell us occur because we're hated because we're free. It's about time for some accountability for the government, but also for we individual American Christians, accountability to our God as to who we're going to trust in these dangerous times. The release of these illnesses alone seems to me to be biblical, a fulfillment of biblical prophecy, and I'm sure you could comment on that as well.
Well, certainly this thought has crossed my mind that I believe God is going to bring punishment to this nation because we've turned our back on Him. But, you know, I think that we would be wise to go back and read some of the writings of our founding fathers. One of them, of course, was saying that all societies are good, but government, even at its best, is a necessary evil, and, of course, at its worst, it's tyranny. And, of course, Thomas Paine, who was one of the great writers of all time, I may not agree with him theologically, but his words certainly had an impact, and he said, tyranny like hell is not easily conquered. Tyranny like hell is not easily conquered, and I would like to suggest that we are moving towards tyranny in America today. Because, you see, our founding fathers recognized that liberty and limited government were synonymous. And if you limit the power of government, men could be free. On the other hand, tyranny and total government are synonymous. And if you have government that regulates every aspect of life, and of course can unleash the United States military on our own population, and that's really what, of course, what the John Water Act is all about, why, tyranny is total government, and I fear that is the direction we're headed. And tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking to John Clark, author of the book Christian Words, Unchristian Actions. And, Chris, it's a book about the Bush administration, but not just about the Bush administration. It's a book about America. It's about American Christians who, many of them, justify torture because the president says it's all right. After all, we've got to torture those terrible and those wicked Muslims who hate us because we're free. And, of course, we have righteous torture. They're terrible people over there. But what we do is righteous because, after all, if we don't torture them, we're not going to be able to protect Americans here. And if we could just save one American life by torturing hundreds of Muslims, that's all right. And, John, I share your concern. What's happened to the soul of America when none of our religious leaders, not one of them, will get up publicly and come out against torture?
Well, that's been what's dismayed me and, as you know, led me to write this book. Fortunately, more and more people in the body of Christ in this country are starting to look at their Bibles before their loyalties to the government. And fortunately, many are starting to look away from the fear that Bush and others would have us embrace and look back to the fearlessness that God would imbue us with. And I think that, personally, I think the next real realization for Americans will be that Americans perceive themselves to be very patriotic. Well, they are. They're nation-loving. But in the sense of patriotic, in the sense of truly standing up for their values, we have some great servicemen, but Americans, by and large, we don't see them rising up right now. We don't see them outraged. And as far as I can see, as a lawyer and a person who is trained somewhat in the history of our founding fathers and our system of government, it has already been usurped. It is already gone. In law, it is gone. In deed, it will shortly follow. And even as the deed unfolds, even as our remaining rights are taken away and our guns are seized like after Katrina, and we are shepherded away and told what to inject our bodies with and what marks to take and what, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I don't see the will of the American people being there as it was in the past to fight for freedom. And I think it's because we have departed from our spiritual growth. We've departed from a faith in God, and we have subjected ourselves to slavery, to materialism and consumption and gluttony. And that's made us vulnerable, and we're soft. And so, again, I don't see how realizing that our government has been hijacked, not just some planes into towers, but our entire government structure has been hijacked. I have nowhere to turn. There's no underground movement in this nation getting ready to fight it. There's no White Rose movement. So I will put my faith in Christ, because without that, where exactly would I go, brother? Where would we go?
Well, I think we have to be involved. I think we have to realize that the most powerful weapon we have is truth. And I think that we still have, through the medium of the talk radio, through the medium of the Internet, we have means of reaching the American people we've never had before. News with Views has 1 million people go to that website every single day. And News with Views, and Chris, an awful lot of people go to World Affairs Brief. I think that Joe Farah has 5 million hits a day on the WorldNet Daily. 5 million people a day are going there to get news. We are reaching people across America. Now, I don't always agree with everything on all of these websites, but there's an awful lot of good material there that everybody should be reading. And then, of course, if you listen to Radio Liberty, why, we'll help you to be able to sort through this so you'll know what's true and what's not. But the important thing is, it's really up to us, it's up to the people in the listening audience, to get people to listen to responsible talk radio. And there are a number of people that we work with that we think are going to be putting out excellent information. We actually have access with satellite. We're on 24 hours a day with Joyce Riley and Butch Paw and Chuck Chrismeyer, who will be our guest, incidentally, tomorrow afternoon. An attorney like you for 18 years, John, and the Lord called him to the ministry, and now he does a talk radio program every day, and certainly one of my favorite guests when we have him on.
Praise God, that's wonderful.
So there are good people out there who are trying to do something, and I think your book is an excellent job, and you have a gift for talking and for writing, and don't get discouraged. Because we have no place to go. We have to stay in this fight. This is where the final battle is going to be fought. Not only for America, but for the Christian civilization. And if America falls, then the whole world falls. And we have to let people understand what's going on behind the scenes. There really are groups. There are people who have a different worldview. People who want a one-world government. And in my estimation, have created this whole Islamic movement funded with your tax money, so we have an enemy that detracts us from what's going on here. And what's going on here? Plan to merge the United States with Mexico and Canada. Plan for the Security and Prosperity Partnership as a stepping stone to creating these similar zones all throughout the world and then uniting the whole world into a one-world government. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about the Posse Comitatus Act, what the significance is of the repeal of this act by the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act, and what it would mean to the people listening to this program.
Well, and if I may, let me preface that by saying I didn't mean to sound discouraging before the break. I guess what I really say is that if I didn't have faith in Christ, I would be discouraged. And those who are putting their faith in their government should be discouraged in that and should put their faith in that higher power. So behind that apparent discouragement is a higher hope. What's behind the Posse Comitatus Act and its history was the awareness throughout our government and our nation's history that a military role is very different from a police role. And policemen, who we are comfortable with in our civilian life, are there hopefully to serve and protect us, as is their motto. Military people are trained to take targets and to be desensitized to human loss, particularly civilian loss, perhaps. And so to take military personnel and use them in a function against the civilian population of our country has always been a big no-no. It's for obvious reasons. And this government has, for several decades now, been trying to chip away at that. And Mr. Bush is making some very sweeping movements in that direction, which, by the way, the growing alternative media, of which your program is a part, is one of the reasons I believe that this is being accelerated, because the powers that be didn't anticipate that they might lose their grip on the mass media through the availability of the Internet to Americans everywhere. So just as you and I are racing quickly to try to educate people while we have this opening, this opportunity, they're trying to close it by hook or by crook. And so they are now creating laws that would allow not only the military to be used against U.S. civilians in times of crisis, which is extremely broad, basically any time that George Bush decides that he needs to maintain public order, including suppressing a conspiracy, however broad that might be. If we worry about a conspiracy in government, we're conspiracy theorists, but the government passes laws so that it can identify conspiracies and squash them. So very quickly we see implemented the kinds of powers that would allow them to use the military against us, but also in an unprecedented fashion to use the National Guard troops, for instance, from one state in another state. Troops here in Vermont would not be quick to want to shoot at the dairy farmers who might be rising up against federally mandated milk prices.
Hold that. We'll be right back.
Yes, thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I'd asked John to explain the Posse Comitatus Law, and he was simply pointing out that the Posse Comitatus Law was passed many years ago. It goes back to the time immediately after the Civil War, when the people in America realized that you should never be able to use the American military against civilians, because police are trained, of course, to protect and to serve the people. The military are trained to kill. That's their purpose. That's their goal. I mean, the purpose of the military is to destroy things and to kill people. And, of course, it's just it's a rather brutal way of saying it, but why would you want to use people who are trained to kill, not police, to maintain law and order, but trained to kill, because that's what the military is, against the American civilians? And yet the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act suspends the Posse Comitatus, number one. Number two, it allows the president to take the National Guard without the permission of the state governors, which has never been the case in the past, now to mobilize the National Guard and to use those against the people. And that is a frightening thing. In other words, why bother to have a governor when you can have the president take dictatorial powers and begin to use the military forces within the state against the population of that or another state? So pick up the story, John.
Well, yes, and thank you. And really, to tie it in a little more broadly with something else you hit on, Doctor, we are talking about how it is that we go about institutionalizing the dehumanization of people. Now, this government is very effectively leading many Americans, even American professed Christians, to dismiss the suffering of many tens or hundreds of thousands of people in foreign deserts because they're Muslims, or because they hate us because we're free, or because their Quran says we're all infidels, and all kinds of this these crusade-like, because these are components of a crusade as well, that we perceive ourselves to be good and the enemy to be evil. This is a necessary component of any war, to desensitize the population to the suffering of the enemy. Now we're seeing it applied against U.S. citizens. We can take, again, we couldn't very well take Vermont National Guard troops and expect them here in the Green Mountains to be firing upon their brethren. We had similar conflicts in the Civil War. But especially in the modern age, if we were to mobilize those forces and say, deploy them to Arizona, where they do not have some affinity with the local population, they would be more readily likely to follow orders. We saw this affected after Katrina as well, where the National Guard and others came in and were brutal towards some of those people. So we again see actions that are contrary to what a Christian nation would do. And we see also the No Child Left Behind and other federal legislation being used to earmark our children for future military service. It is Big Brother and end times unfolding, it seems to me.
In fact, one of the most frightening things about Katrina was the fact that there were the mercenaries there, the Blackwater. These are hired killers, and they were down there supposedly guarding things, and we don't know all that they were doing, but to bring in mercenaries into an area like New Orleans, in the name of protecting the people there, of course. We always do everything in the name of protecting the people, because the government loves the people. Ladies and gentlemen, our founding fathers feared government. Thomas Jefferson said, in matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in government, but bind them down from mischief with the chains of the Constitution. And then, of course, echoing the words of some of the founding fathers of this country, you know, that government governs best, that governs the least. That was what the people who created this country believed in. But that's not what the current administration believes in. They have suspended comitatus. They have massively expanded government control. And are there any other implications of the John Warner Act that you're concerned about, or the Military Commission Act, you know, that were established in October, of just a month ago? But in the middle of the night, where very few people really realize the implications of this draconian legislation passed just before the election, is designed to encourage a military dictatorship in America, at least according to Senator Patrick Leahy. And if this is true, why isn't Rush Limbaugh and Bill Maher and Sean Hannity, these great people, telling us about what's going on?
Well, it would seem that, and I don't want to sound judgmental of those people, but it would seem that their eyes are being dazzled with the materialistic fruits and trinkets of modern society, and they are putting their faith in those things. The broader legislation, it does much more than just gut posse comitatus protections. It eliminates habeas corpus for Americans as well. Again, how it will be implemented, I think we can pretty much foretell by how this government has already used its draconian methodologies and laws. And it eliminates a number of protections, the right to contact counsel, the right to confront accusers. It allows the use of tainted evidence, of coerced testimony. It allows the use of hearsay, which hundreds, probably thousands of years, certainly back into British common law and into Roman law, I believe, have rejected hearsay as being unreliable.
And of course, and now so is evidence obtained under torture, and that's going to be allowed. I just can't believe that. Where's the outcry? Evidence gotten by torture is now going to be allowed in courts?
Well, again, people cower in fear and allow others to suffer in such a way because of their fearfulness. And I think that's why we were told in the past, and we've been told by our God, that we must not fear. It is sinful to fear. And we look at a nation that is not putting its trust in God, but is putting its trust in government and the military and money and insurance policies. And it's fearful because of that. And it's really not that surprising. And so hopefully, as we spread the alarm and educate people, we also help them turn to God. And when we turn to God, we not only don't fear, but we start to embrace His authority, which then we wouldn't be torturing. And we would afford these humanitarian protections to our enemies, let alone to ourselves. But we are now going along, being led by the nose, and allowing our government to take away the very freedoms that we entrusted them to protect. You're very right in quoting the Founding Fathers. I always like to quote by William Penn, who said something to the effect that men don't need government, government needs men. We forget who's working for whom in this country. And we're now looking for those entities that were supposed to serve us, to protect us, in ways that were just never envisioned by the Founding Fathers.
And of course it was William Penn who said, you know, those will not be ruled by God, will be ruled by tyrants. Are we really being ruled by God when we're actively supporting torture, and it's being justified by people saying, well, gee, we've got to do that, you know. It's all right to do that.
Well, and we have some surprising voices, even from the left, like Alan Dershowitz, are repeatedly arguing that this is okay. And, of course, they use the most extreme example to create the rule, the example of the ticking bomb scenario where you know that someone knows where a bomb is, and wouldn't you torture them to find out the answer? Well, that's a setup. They'll often say, wouldn't you do that to protect your child? Well, yes, of course, if that scenario were so clear, but if I knew what was in their head. You see, by definition, our society is built on the rule of law. And what's in a man's heart is left to God. And Jesus is clear about that as well. But what we're trying to do is institute a methodology, a dehumanizing methodology, to find out, to discern what's in a person's heart by force. And by definition, you can't do that once you open that door. So it might sound easy in that facile case. It might sound all cut and dry, but it defies logic. And people are not looking at Christ's logic or God's biblical teachings, because the Bible does embrace and discuss these kinds of lies and deceits. And people, unfortunately, are very much out of touch with God's Word. I don't know how we are to know Him if we don't heed Him or follow His voice.
Amen to that. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to, of course, have a question for John, if you would like to know more about this legislation, or if you maybe you disagree, maybe you think that torture is all right, that we should, at least in wartime, why we should resort to this sort of thing, and then, of course, when we get back to peace, if we ever do, then we'll stop torturing people and justifying it. But if we're going to justify it on people in other countries, what about people who are accused of being, you know, enemy agents here at home in this country? What about people who are deemed by the military commissions to be, you know, enemy combatants? They're American citizens who are critical of the government. And after all, when you criticize the government, you're helping the enemy. And this is the thing that frightens me.
Well, and it's so broad now that I believe under the Military Commissions Act, the language is if you don't have allegiance to the government. And again, it's given a tremendous amount of power to Mr. Bush or whomever the president would be to determine what these terms mean. And ordinarily, and that's another issue, by the way, you asked me what else concerned me about this act. Normally, as our founding fathers set it up, there was a separation of powers. So that if the executive started to get running away with itself, as this one is, that the judiciary would be there to say, no, the Constitution is paramount, and any laws that conflict with it would be struck down. Particularly vagueness is one area. If a statute is unconstitutionally vague, it is thrown down. Many of these provisions are very vague. Many of the provisions of the past acts of this administration, the USA Patriot Act, are vague. But this legislation purports to deprive the Supreme Court or any jurisdiction or any judicial body of the authority to oversee its provisions, which is directly opposed to the Constitution, where I say, once again, it's patently been usurped. It's right there ahead before us that our Constitution has been thrown out the window, what Mr. Bush called, apparently last year, just a goddamn piece of paper, quote-unquote. That's what he thinks of our rights and our God-given divine rights to freedom that he says he's taking around the world while he's spreading around the world while he's taking them away from us at home. Terrible hypocrisy.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And before we go on, John, let me give you an opportunity to put out your website and tell people where they can get your book, Christian Words, Unchristian Actions.
Well, thank you. I'm not so good at the plugging thing and the propaganda, but I did write the book so that people could absorb some of this information. As you know, it's very scripturally based, and there are a lot of Christian authors quoted there, as well as a lot of factual information about what this government is doing in the last few years. It can be obtained through my publisher at 877-421-7323. I'll give that number again in a second. And there are also links to that publisher in Amazon.com and elsewhere through my website. My website is www.christianwords.us. And there are excerpts from the book there that I included so that people could read a little bit about the kinds of arguments that it makes and the type of challenges that it offers us. The number again is 877-421-7323. And the website is www.christianwords.us.
And, of course, it's a fascinating book. It's really very well done. I've really enjoyed it. And I think that other people who have an opportunity to read it will enjoy it as well. So, again, that is christianwords.us, christianwords.us. And the telephone number, 877-421-7323. Well, let's go to Jim, who's calling us from Missouri. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Good evening. Hi. Just wonder if it's not too far gone already with those people that were arrested in Philadelphia at the gay pride deal. I mean, if Hillary Clinton were president, I'm not sure if those people would have ever gotten out of jail. They were each facing 47 years, and I just wondered if your guest is thinking I'm being too pessimistic.
All right, of course, Jim is saying, oh, it's too late. We can't...
No, sir, I'm asking.
Okay, go ahead.
Sometimes I get discouraged and wonder, but I am asking. I'm not
all right,
stating.
Fine. How would you respond to Jim?
Well, to be frank, I do think it's too late in the sense that I don't put my faith in this government to survive the challenges that it's facing and avoiding. Americans are really not addressing some of the greatest problems within our country, and our government isn't either. So I guess I think it's too late? I don't think it's too late for us to try to retake our country. I certainly don't think it's too late for us to harvest souls for Christ and spread the word of God. That's where the hope is. So I don't think it's too late at all for that point. So I don't think like that we should give up as Christians. But I think exactly we should use the discouragement of many who have put their faith in this government as an opportunity for Christ to plant the seeds of His truth, His peace, and His love in the face of the failures of this world. And so I see a failure of this government, but a vindication of God's truth.
Let me just comment on that because I think it's an important subject. First of all, Jim, you have to understand if you listen to our programs regularly, you realize there really are secret societies out there. If you study them carefully, you'll find they all tie together. They are energized by actual evil forces within our society. There is a spiritual dimension. There's the dimension we live in. There's a spiritual dimension. And there are beings, of course, that actually go between the two. And there are actually demonic beings in the world. And they are energizing this whole move towards the new world order and the destruction of Christianity. So our job is to do our best. This is what we're called to do. If God is going to intervene, He's going to intervene, but only God is going to save America. But if we sit back and do nothing, then we become part of the problem. When you look at it that way, you realize, of course, that I am not going to save America. John is not going to save America, and you're not going to save America. Only God can save America, but we have to be worthy of His intervention. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. I have to admit, I've been reading another one of those books that you authored, you had the author on about, and it's just really discouraging.
But don't get discouraged. Put your faith in the Lord and then just get back there and work all the harder, okay?
Yes, sir.
God bless, and let's go to Laverne, who's calling from Spokane. Hi, Laverne. Did you have a question for our guest?
Yes. Did Warner bypass Congress on this military commission appropriation act? Is it too late for us to contact our congressman and be heard on this issue?
Well, John?
Well, I believe it was actually signed into law on October 17th.
It was signed into law. This is a stealth legislation. They didn't want the American people to know, and so they got us all looking at other issues, and then they snuck this thing through. So what you need to do, of course, is write to your congressman and say, get this thing repealed. And, you know, and threaten the president with impeachment if he doesn't, you know, if he threatens to veto this after it has been repealed by the Congress. We need the congressman to take a stand on this issue immediately. So write to your congressman and get the information out to everybody up there in Spokane.
Oh, I'm glad we can do something.
Amen
to
that. Okay.
If we all band together, we can do it.
Yes, and please understand, get copies of the legislation. If you can't get it, we can send you material on it. You know, if you just give us a call. But
all right.
Get the information and help us to get the information out. Thanks very much. And
well, thanks. I want to thank John and you for this, because the truth is powerful.
It really is. There's nothing as powerful as the truth, and often nothing so strange. Actually, Daniel Webster said that. Bye-bye. Let's go to Evelyn in Massachusetts. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi, Doctor. John, I think you're wonderful. And
my wife heard that. Go ahead. Hold that thought for just a moment here. We'll be right back.
Okay.
To wrap up the program here in just a moment. Okay, go ahead, Evelyn. What were we going to say?
I think, you know, it's so ironic. They don't even want to give these poor people a trial. They gave Jesus a trial. It was a mockery, but at least they gave him a trial. So this shows you how far into darkness this government, and I call it a beast, this is how far in darkness this government has gone.
Well, basically, Chris, what they want to do is establish these military commissions, you know, and then, of course, you know, if you're accused of being a enemy combatant, you go before them, but it's only a mockery. This is my impression. Isn't that yours, John? Certainly, the way this thing is set up, you're not going to get a fair trial, are you?
Well, I think it is a mockery, and when you take away those constitutional guarantees, that's why they were there, to ensure fairness, and not just habeas corpus, but the tainting of evidence, etc. And what you see, though, you're right, it is a mockery, and I'm reminded of Orwell, where he talks about slavery is freedom, and we see now that we say that our offensive actions are all defensive. Everything seems to be a double speak. Sort of an opposite of the truth.
Right, that's what the Bible says the devil would do. He'd make good look bad and bad look good. So we
Amen.
Know who's ruling the powers that be right now. And I believe America's going to live. Does that encourage you?
I believe that we have to work and work as if it's up to us and pray as it's up to the
Lord. And turn to God for enlightenment and direction.
Amen to that. God bless you. Thanks very much for calling.
Okay.
You get all the rest of the people back there in Massachusetts listening.
Well, I got a bunch in Springfield listening.
Thanks so much. Good
night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, you've got about a minute to wrap up the program, John.
Well, thank you for that privilege. Any praises that your listeners have voiced towards me are God's. And anything that you and I do, as we know, is for His glory. And that gives me purpose when I also sometimes feel that we're living in a surreal world and not the America I grew up in, which sometimes I'm a little ashamed because I put my faith in Christ and then these sorts of things happen and I realize that I still hold hope for my country. I still am still upset about it. And if I really trusted God, maybe I wouldn't be so surprised, but I am, and I am dismayed, and I'm most dismayed that more Americans are not paying attention to what's happening and watching their home court because their eyes are drawn abroad in fear. We need to be looking at the home court of Christ. We should be in prayer and in God's Word every day, and He will guide us through all of these things and all of man's bizarre laws that keep being churned out by this government.
God bless you, John. We'll look forward to having you on our other programs later this week. Thanks so very much.
God bless you, sir.
Good night. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have Jonathan on the line, but we're not going to have a chance to get him. I'm afraid he called in too late, although we will have a program the next hour, and he's certainly welcome to call then. But this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and quite frankly, we need your help if you believe in what we're doing, if you believe that we have a different message than others do, if you believe we're truly involved in a spiritual battle, being fought on a political and ideological battlefield, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We'd love to welcome you into the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And then, of course, we suggest everybody to begin with, read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. It's easy to read. You can read the book or watch the video or the DVD. It's all the same story. But it will take you into the secret societies. There really are secret societies. Please go to my website at radioliberty.com and read my August and September newsletters. That's radioliberty.com. They're there. You have our permission to copy those newsletters and get that information out. That's how you can help us to get the information out. And it's all documented. If you need documentation for anything, why, we can tell you where to get it or provide it for you. And then, of course, we hope that many of you want to get some of the new four-tape sets we're offering. Certainly, we're offering the four-tape set on the Changing Church, Globalism, the Secret Threat, the Impending Police State, Medical Myths, What You Need to Know, the North American Community, the Demise of National Sovereignty, and the Truth About the Holocaust. Those are just some of the new four-tape sets. That's the Changing Church, Globalism, the Secret Threat, the Impending Police State, Medical Myths and What You Need to Know, the North American Community and the Demise of the National Sovereignty, and the Truth About the Holocaust. To put things into a clearer perspective, we hope many of you will certainly want to get some of the DVDs we have on what happened on 9-1-1. And when you understand that what you think you saw on 9-1-1 is not what you saw or what really happened. What you need, of course, we have Alex Jones' Terror Storm. We have the DVD, 9-1-1 Press for the Truth, the story of the Jersey Girls. We have the In Plain Sight, put out by the Power Hour. And then lastly, we carry 9-1-1, The Day That Changed America Forever. That is you can either get that in DVD or in VHS form, put out by our good friend Dave Wagner, but it's a very, very powerful story. And you'll see film clips there that nobody else has. That's why we carry it. That's 9-1-1 Press for the, pardon me, 9-1-1, The Day That Changed America Forever. And then, of course, we hope many of you will remember that we do carry the Berkey products. And if you'd like to consider getting the Berkey products, if you get them to us, you'll get either a video or a four-tape set that we've produced, as a bonus for getting the items to us. If you're interested in the health products we carry, you need to have a good supply, because we do not know what the future holds. But I will tell you that right now they are working at Fort Detrick, Maryland, to turn out all sorts of terrible new diseases. We've violated all the treaties that we've signed. Of course, we want you to know these new diseases we've created are they're all for defensive purposes. They're only defensive, lethal diseases. We talked a little earlier about the book Project Daylily, that goes into the background of the AIDS epidemic and these terrible new diseases, that genetically engineered diseases they've created that are afflicting so many American people. That's Project Daylily. Excellent reading. We carry, of course, the book by Len Horowitz, Emerging Viruses, goes into the background of the AIDS epidemic. If you haven't read my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it's must reading. If you'd like to understand the program for world population control, the government document, NSSM 200, that's NSSM, National Security Study Memorandum 200, all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 or 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Our website, radioliberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you of the views that are expressed here are not necessarily the Prime Minister of Israel, who was killed by the Israeli intelligence forces, just exactly as John Fitzgerald Kennedy was killed by our intelligence forces in the form of the CIA, and we have a great deal of evidence on that in our various tape sets, our four tape sets that we have make available on the Kennedy assassination. And I think it's so very important that people really understand what is going on, you know, today. But anyway, Barry Shamus has certainly been trying to let the people of Israel understand that the leadership of Israel is controlled by the Council on Foreign Relations. They're not dedicated to preserving Israel. They intend upon destroying Israel. Now, a lot of people try to tell you that, oh, my goodness, it is the Zionist lobby that's controlling Washington, D.C. Well, if the Zionist lobby is controlling Washington, D.C. and determining our policies, why then are we forcing the Israelis to pull back to this small perimeter behind a great big wall? And why did we force them to give up most of the land that they controlled beforehand and put themselves into a totally indefensible position? Why would we have done that if the Israeli lobby controls Washington, D.C.? People will point to the sinking of the Liberty, USS Liberty, back in 1967, or at least the attack on the Liberty by the Israeli warplanes, without understanding that that was done specifically at the instigation of our government, that wanted to actually sink an American ship and then blame Nasser for it so we could attack Israel, we could attack Egypt. That was what it was all about. But of course, they couldn't let the American people know that. But if you go back and you really study what's happened, and I've tried to get people who really study this very carefully to come on the radio, they're quite frankly afraid to come on. But what happened was that the Israeli planes attacked the American ship, the Liberty. Some of the Israeli pilots refused to fire because it was an American ship. They knew it was an American warship, and they were court-martialed eventually because of that. But, you know, on at least two separate occasions, why the naval fleet there in the Mediterranean had actually sent, you know, planes, squadrons of planes to defend the Liberty, and each time President Johnson called those planes back because, as he said, I want the ship to go to the bottom. Well, it didn't go to the bottom, it survived. People use this as a basis for anti-Semitism without understanding that we have controlled the Israeli government for a long period of time. And there are really secret, invisible forces working behind the scenes. And one of them is the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission. And if you read my newsletters, you'll come to really understand what so many of these are about. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry. Oh, hi, Barry. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm fine, thanks.
Well, fine. Well, bring us up to date with what's going on over in Israel. What do you foresee? I mean, certainly the information I'm getting suggests there's going to be another war within another month or two. What's your thoughts?
Oh, they might wait till the end of winter. It gets very, very messy in the winter. So they could go till spring. You don't want to fight a missile war in the rain. But Israel is... I don't know what to do about my children. Okay, I got to get them out of there. This country is going to fight another round. The Arabs know very well that the missiles hitting Tel Aviv and the airport will cause lots of fun, and they're preparing with better missiles. And Israel cannot win a missile war, and its leadership. By the way, you might think its leadership was insane. From the statements I've been reading out of Olmert, but it's not insane. The man is just being run by the powers that be, and he does what he's told to. And I'm going to talk about that tonight, how they actually even control the way he speaks. But you would assume he's insane. He has so much confidence that Israel has the respect of the Arab world that he's warning them about what he might do to Hezbollah. Oh, my. Are we on the air yet?
Yes, we are on the air. You're being heard.
Oh, then I gave you a summary. Now let's get right to it. let's start with the homosexual rally in Jerusalem that got canceled.
All right, fine. I was so glad to hear it, at least at that, because that is such an abomination to God.
Well, as I said, it was done on purpose. And once again, finally, I was a bit in the news again for uncovering stuff. And I might even have played a role, some role, in getting that thing canceled. People have told me that by exposing the Ford Foundation as the one who paid for it, I had done some people a pretty big favor.
Well, of course, the Ford Foundation is behind so many of the things, but I didn't know they were actually sponsoring the gay parade in Jerusalem. I mean,
they paid for the whole thing.
Did they really?
Now, yeah, you got to read my articles. I know you're on the list. Go find them. If not, go to my website, thebarrychalmerswebsite.com, and you'll catch the articles. My last two articles, article number one, the Ford Foundation supports the Jerusalem Open House. The Jerusalem Open House was this homosexual house that sponsored the parade. It received $200,000 last year from the Ford Foundation.
Hold that thought, Barry. We'll be back in just a moment with all of our stations. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Barry Shamish, and we're talking about, of course, the gay parade that was to be, have been held in Jerusalem here. It was canceled, fortunately, but Barry was saying that it was being sponsored by a house over there, the exact name I don't recall. But
Jerusalem Open House.
But basically, this is funded by the Ford Foundation, so directly or indirectly, the Ford Foundation, the great paragon of virtue that funds the illegal immigration movement and communist and socialist and depraved activities all over America and the world, was funding the what was to have been a gay parade in Jerusalem. If there was ever an affront to God, that would be it. Go right ahead.
Oh, I'm losing you. Have you got me?
Yeah, you're doing fine.
Okay. Now, first of all, the Jerusalem Open House is the homosexual house in Jerusalem that organized a parade. The Ford Foundation directly gave them $200,000. Now, the only indirect part might have been that it went to the Israel, oh my goodness, the New Israel Fund. And guess who is the leading sponsor of the New Israel Fund, has been for many, many years, and that is the Bronfman Brothers. So it's Ford and Bronfman. Ford have taken over a big role in the New Israel Fund. But for years it was the Bronfman Brothers who used that to fund their simply, you demotivate society with the programs they fund. These are all the most negative, screwball, marginal programs now get $300,000, $400,000 to demoralize Israeli society. Now what I did, I'm going to jump to the next amazing, amazing discovery in article two that I wrote was the lesbian synagogue in New York was also paid for to the tune of $80,000 by the Ford Foundation. That was Beit Simchat Torah of Rabbi Sharon Kleinman. They were the ones that were going to make the parade a worldwide fiasco. They were in Jerusalem with Ford Foundation money. I found the actual grant to the Ford paid for both sides. Okay, they paid for the sponsor of the parade, and they paid for the battler, the New York radicals, who would walk naked or as close to it as they could get away with down the streets of Jerusalem. And these were, of course, heavily, heavily lesbianized with their rabbi. I assume Sharon Kleinman is a woman. In short, Ford paid for everything.
And what you're talking about is a lesbian synagogue in New York, a lesbian synagogue.
The gay movement is funded by Ford. It's unbelievable how much it's funded. But here's the big one. Mostly I gave a list of what they've given to Israel to destroy our integrity, our faith in ourselves. It's uncanny what they have given money to, but they gave money to other things that should interest you. They give it to the Council on Foreign Relations. You will not believe how much money the CFR gets from the Ford Foundation.
Oh, I would believe it because I've been back to the CFR, and of course every day when I would sign in, I was going through the records, and I'd look at the people signing it above me for the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, or, you know, the Carnegie Foundation.
Well, that's
CFR, they all work together.
Carnegie, CFR, of course, is Carnegie, Ford, and Rockefeller.
Right.
And that's what they're known as.
Right.
Well, what do you know? The Ford Foundation is giving grant after grant for the Council on Foreign Relations to study some stupid rebellion or population or need for population reduction somewhere in Africa. They were handing out the money.
And of course, one reason, of course, that there's so much emphasis on the homosexuality is not only because it involves depravity, but because it's great for population control, because most homosexuals and lesbians don't reproduce. And actually, the people in favor of population control have been funding and encouraging this for at least 35 years I know of, this movement.
Well, this wasn't Israel, but I'm going to get back to that after I quickly mention, of course, the Lambria, the homosexual headquarters in America, is funded by the Ford Foundation, and I found the actual grant, and I printed it along with the Israeli stuff. It's not, now here's where it gets a little tricky. Ford can have its role in homosexuality in Bangkok or Mexico or Sao Paulo or somewhere. I suppose that's all right. When they start arranging homosexual rallies for Jerusalem or the Vatican, it becomes a little less than all right. They are founding, in the case of Jerusalem, it was not so much a spreading of the homosexual myth as it was the utter downgrading of Judaism. That's what this was, when the Orthodox of Jerusalem gathered and fought these homosexuals to the rest of the Jewish world. Well, who needs a religion like that? The rest of the Jewish world is ridiculously liberal. I'm now in, and we'll talk about shortly how it was rejected from the United States. I'm now in Vancouver, British Columbia. Because the Americans rejected me at their border, if you can believe this. But let's stick with this. This is a very liberal town, and the Jews are quick disappearing in this town. You show images of the religious, of Judaism, fighting the homosexuals. These people love homosexuals. They believe all the propaganda. They think they're the best. And who needs a religion that doesn't like homosexuals in their town? It would have been the end of Judaism. A people, a religion, without their religion completely gone, is no people anymore. It would have been a moral holocaust had this rally taken place, because there would have been a lot of serious violence, and it would have been religious against homosexual, and for that the Ford Foundation found something far, far more important than population control. They were talking, finally, let's get rid of this Jewish religion, the same Jewish religion that Henry Ford despised. He wrote the International Jew. He spread the Elders of Zion all through America. He supplied trucks to the Nazis during World War II. He hated the Jews. Now, here is his money going to wipe out the religion of the Jews in one shot. And he had the power because he was supporting the whole homosexual movement. It was not a coincidence. This is all part of the war against the Jews. And I have a feeling that by exposing Ford, I actually may have played some role in stopping this.
Well,
I'll tell you one thing.
I hope you did. I'm so glad it was stopped. And what actually happened? Were the rabbis just put their foot down over there and say, enough of this foolishness? Or who actually pulled the strings and said, we're not going to allow this?
Well, it was, in fact, well, a rabbi gets a lot of credit as Rabbi Eli Mansour, but there's lots of rabbis who gathered their troops together. They promised to bring 400,000 of their people into Jerusalem and promised to stomp these homosexuals out. And the police could only gather 12,000 men. Now, I believe that's what happened, in large part, that there was some serious fear of the homosexuals getting ransacked. I mean, really, really ransacked. But I got to tell you, they wanted that violence, and they spread it. Because one day before the actual parade, they chickened out. Okay, so something happened. But I got to tell you something. They could have ruined Judaism. They had the chance of their life. What were they doing? To protect, you know, a few hundred homosexuals? The fact remains, nonetheless, that Ford was exposed.
Well, I'm glad that you did it, Barry. And, of course, I believe that God would, you know, been terribly offended if this had been allowed to happen. And maybe God had an affair, part of it. Who knows what it was, but I'm glad you got the information out on the Ford Foundation's involvement, because we've been trying to tell people, you know, for decades that Ford is one of the major culprits in this whole effort to destroy America.
I got him cold. Go to my website, the Barry Chamish website.com. Look at the last two articles. I got them cold.
I got
the documents. I got the name of the sponsor, what they do, the whole thing. I got them. Ford isn't just behind homosexuality. Ford is behind the destruction of Israel. And this is what I keep trying to tell people, that Israel's leaders have accepted that Israel goes. Okay, it's that simple. But can you imagine this? A victory against homosexuality in this world. There's no such thing. Jerusalem had an enormous victory. Was there one word that the parade ended in the face of opposition from the religious Jews of Jerusalem? Not even a word.
Well, I think it's fascinating that it's actually taken place, and hopefully this will not be coming back, but I'm sure they'll come back again and again and again until they can desecrate the holy city. The holy city of the Jews, the holy city of the Muslims, the holy city of the Christians. But I think you must have a lot of people reading your website all over the world, do they?
What can I tell you? People somehow or another find me interesting.
All right, well, I always find you interesting. That's why I'd love to have you on our programs here. And our guest this evening is Barry Chamish. If you want to reach him, his website is www.thebarrychamish.com.
No, that won't do it. The Barry Chamish, BarryChamish website.
Website.com.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. The Barry Chamish website.com. Is that the actual name of the website?
Yes.
All right, fine. The Barry Chamish website.com. Go ahead, Barry.
Well, okay. Now, before I go on to the big subject, you know I got stopped from going to the United States? I was supposed to be in Alaska for a year.
No, I didn't know that. What happened?
I was at the Vancouver, British Columbia airport, and the Americans stopped me. They pulled me out of the line and banned me from going to the United States. They said, you have no residence in Canada. I said, well, I haven't lived here in 33 years. Why should I? And they said, that's it. You're going back to Israel. You don't belong here. You don't belong in Canada. You get on a plane, go back to Israel. I said to them, I'm not a criminal. You haven't found anything in my bags. They said, I'm going to get this Fairbanks, Alaska to work. Okay, there you go. I'm going up to Fairbanks, Alaska to work.
Well, obviously, this was a cover to cover what they were doing. Obviously, they must be on some sort of a hate list.
God knows I don't know. If anybody knows anything about how this system works, please contact me, email me, Chamish, Chamish, at NetVision, one word, NETVISION.net, NET.IL. Chamish at netvision.net.il. I want to know what went on there. I mean, I am now sitting in Vancouver, and I'm gaining residency. I'm getting a driver's license, and I'm getting an apartment address because I want to go back to the United States. That's where I earn my living, giving lectures. But currently, I'm banned. I want you to know that.
Well, let's hope that something can happen, and maybe we can invite you to come down one of these days and give a talk. Although, of course, we just got through our talk. I wish we'd known earlier we could have invited you to our yearly seminar. It's going to be a year before we have another one, but out there could invite you and help you at least get into the country for the time temporarily.
At a minimum, you could send a message, a fax a message to the customs at Vancouver, British Columbia Airport, and say you want me there and see what happens.
All right, fine. Well, we'll talk about that. You give me a call off the air, and we'll see what maybe somebody else out there can give Barry a hand, because he is certainly one of the most fascinating speakers, and certainly he appears on a regular basis on many radio programs. We've had him many times on the Radio Liberty program, or the American Freedom Network program, or the Genesis program. We get him onto all of our programs. Are you doing many of the other talk radio programs in the States here?
Well, I'll tell you, my peak was during that war. During the war, Israel was really talked about. You know, they were looking for guests all over the place during those marvelous 33 days of summer. But don't worry, people still get to hear me quite a bit. It's all right. Now, do you want to know why?
Why?
Let's go to the next subject. It's an amazing subject, and I'm about to write about it. But here, by Newsweek magazine, because Ehud Olmert is interviewed on the way to meeting Bush in Washington. Now, get ready. This is straight from Newsweek. You know, like, this is a surprise visit. The world doesn't know about it, but Newsweek has got a reporter on the plane. Now, here is what Ehud Olmert says. You ready?
Yeah.
Read my lips. I'm ready for territorial compromises.
What is he talking about?
Let's see, document. Read my lips. I'm ready for territorial compromises. I know what he's talking about.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Barry Sammis. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Barry is just coming. That first of all, he's been banned from coming into American territory. Somebody's got him onto a list, and of course he's living up in Vancouver, British Columbia at the present time. Obviously, somebody doesn't want his message out. Well, he was just talking about Prime Minister Olmert of Israel, who was coming to the United States to meet with President Bush. Was that just this last weekend, wasn't it?
Indeed.
And, of course, you go ahead and tell.
It was a tremendous surprise, supposedly. Read My Lips is the same guy who wrote for George Bush the father.
Now, why don't you go ahead and tell. Apparently, somebody from Newsweek was interviewing Olmert, and what did Olmert say?
Well, what he said is, I'll repeat it again if you want. Read My Lips, I'm ready for territorial compromises. Like that's... normal from the United States. The American public relations advisors are giving Israel's leaders all the crappy stock answers they give their own leaders. Now, they slipped up because the Read My Lips thing was a little too famous this time around. Now Olmert's saying it, Read My Lips, I'm ready for territorial compromises. Like, this is the biggest announcement that could ever be made, and you better read his lips. Rabin, I saw him do this once. He was at a rally at the Wingate Complex in Netanya, sponsored by the Jerusalem Post. You never heard booing so loud in your life. And I was, by the way, amongst the booers with my kid on my shoulders, little kids booing him. I said, "That's right, Art, boo the bad man." You know, he was about 3 years old. The point of the matter is Rabin called everyone racist. Now, what does that mean? It means his American advisors told him that these are American kids, and they know that, you know, when you have any problem with these American kids, call them racist. You know, in other words, you're anti-Arab because you didn't support Oslo. This is what they do. Rabin never heard the word racist in his whole life. They give them the stock answers. He was told that's what they say, that's what they say. Olmert is completely run by this CFR business. It is not a small thing. He's totally run by them. Now keep in mind and never forget, please, Sharon was murdered. Just keep that in mind. Now an interesting thing happened 2 weeks ago, one week ago on the anniversary of Rabin's murder. A new film came out. Miriam Oren, someone I've quoted in my books at length, who was standing right beside Rabin, told everyone he wasn't hurt, he wasn't hurt. After the noises, he stepped into the car. A new video came out vindicating the new video. I had that video 11 years ago. I foolishly lost it. It was recovered, and lo and behold, Chamish is vindicated over Rabin. I'm not even in Israel, and the Chamish was vindicated stuff is all over the Internet.
Now, for our listeners out there, Barry Chamish was saying 11 years ago that Rabin was shot from behind. He continued walking, and then, of course, he got into the car. He was actually then shot from the front by his own security guards who severed his spinal column. There's no way you can walk, you know, and to get into the car after your spinal column is severed. And isn't that pretty much what it was? And you actually had you had a video at that time which obviously showed him. I remember seeing that, and he kept walking after he was supposedly shot from behind and supposedly killed by this fellow. And he probably was just a patsy like Lee Harvey Oswald or like Timothy McVeigh and so many of the others.
Well, like I say, as a matter of fact, you do the same thing. Please email me. I've got 5 DVDs and CD-ROMs, including Rabin, and I'm just getting rid of them. Mailing from Canada is a nightmare. Next, you can see the video all over again. But Yoram Rubin, the person that murdered Rabin, the one who actually pulled the trigger, he was the one who brought Sharon into the hospital. Same guy. Sharon was brought into the hospital after drinking tea with Shimon Peres at the Knesset. Half an hour later, he didn't feel so good, and Yoram Rubin brought him into the hospital. It's the same gang of thugs and murderers.
Now, you think that, what, they poisoned him?
You bet they did.
All right,
you bet they did.
Let's get your email out one more time, slowly.
Chamish, Chamish, at NetVision, one word, NETVISION.net, NET.IL, Chamish at netvision.net.il.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment here with Barry Chamish, and of course we'll continue his story of what's going on. And of course, Barry anticipates there's going to be another attack on Israel, I hear, in a relatively few months. You think it'll be after winter? I hope, of course, he's right. We're going to just have to wait and see. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Barry Chamish. Of course, we're talking about the situation over in Israel. And certainly, as far as Sharon actually is not dead, is he? Isn't he just terribly incapacitated?
Well, he's waiting for a brain transplant.
All right. He's just really more or less a totally non-compass mentis then, huh?
Yes, they're waiting for the next brain to be brought in, and he gets it.
Well, it's such a tragedy. He certainly was a brilliant individual, but of course, he was part and parcel of this whole CFR complex.
He was a CFR patsy. I believe it was my book, Save Israel. Nonetheless, he was, since 1974, Henry Kissinger's patsy in Israel. Sharon was a proud left-winger, raised in a kibbutz, deepest friends with Shimon Peres, who was given a wonderful opportunity to break up the Israeli right wing. He stuck his own political party into the Kairut party. They called it the Likud, and he destroyed the Israeli right wing. There is no one a right winger can vote for in Israel today. It's hopeless. The Kairut party is dead. There's no more Jabotinsky, no more Shamir, no more Begin. The entire tradition of, by the way, honest Zionism. And I'm saying this seriously, because when you look at the labor Zionists, the Sabbateans, you could not have a more vicious, vicious set of Jews, or if they are Jews. Let's just put it this way. There is no right wing anymore in Israel, thanks to Sharon. There is no one to vote for but the Sabbateans. Now, I'm going to say it, and only once, because this is the wrong time. I have a book about the Shabtatsri, labor Zionism, and the Holocaust. The Israeli peacemakers, the left-wingers, hate Judaism with all their heart and soul. They believe that the two people were the real messiahs, Shabtai Tzvi and Jacob Frank. They set up Israel not as a protection for Jews, but for the complete destruction of the Jews. And they worked in the 1930s with the Nazis. The most famous of their agreements was the transfer agreement. There's much literature about this. Israel's leaders want Israel to die. They're conspiring with the people killing Israel. And this is what I'm trying to tell the Israeli people, and this is why no one's listening, that the Israeli leadership is working against the Jewish people. And that's my message. And somehow or another, they don't, you know, the Jews sure don't want to hear this message. They've been duped about, this labor Zionism.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back from Barry Shemesh here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Barry Shemesh. And Barry Shemesh's message is really very simple. The wicked people have taken over both political parties in Israel. The right wing is really not existent. It's been infiltrated and destroyed, just like the conservative movement in the United States has been infiltrated and destroyed. And, of course, the current administration is not conservative. I mean, George Bush is dedicated to amnesty. He couldn't get that through for illegal immigrants with the Republicans in, so he got rid of a lot of Republicans, and now he can work with those Democrats who will push for amnesty. George Bush is dedicated to globalism, not to America. George Bush is going to destroy the Christian influence in government, and he's going to discredit the conservative movement. He's doing a very good job of it. Now, very, very similar things have happened over in Israel. That is, Barry is pointing out, they have destroyed the conservative movement over in Israel. And, of course, they control the liberal movement there. The people really have nobody to vote for at all. And it is Barry's contention, and I believe he's right, is that these people are not trying to preserve the Jewish homeland. They want to destroy the Jewish people. Would that be a fair statement, Jerry?
Yeah, it would certainly be a fair statement.
Okay.
Look, you look at the Israeli people. You think about them. When I moved to Israel over 30 years ago, you moved because these were proud people. These were people who did what was necessary to survive, and they won. But compare them to the Israelis today. The Israelis, first of all, the mentality of that country is deeply inappropriate to the situation they're in. They've got the European peace symbols and peace moods and peace music, but their situation is being surrounded by people who are going to destroy them as soon as possible. So you've got everything is inappropriate in Israel. There is no way to explain the thinking of the Israeli people, why they have allowed Oslo to go through. There's no way. There's no way to explain, unless they put something in the water, the Israelis have taken a magic drug, and that drug convinced them that every bad move is a good move in their behalf. In other words, if you pull back from land, if you give land to your enemies, that's a good thing for peace. And somehow or another, they believe this nonsense. Now, I got to tell you, I ran from Israel because I was so sick. I had a stroke. I had a car accident. I'm in court. I'm out of court. It was a bad, bad situation for me. But my heart is broken, number one. My children, I spoke to them this week. And my son, who's been very unemotional about all this, they all agreed I've got to come back home for them. I'm not going to do it. It's too dangerous. I'll have to somehow build something for me here. The fact remains, though, I miss my children. They miss me. The country is so dangerous. I'm afraid to get off the plane there. The country is going to go in a war that's going to be just horrible. and my children are trapped. What am I supposed to do? I made a terrible mistake. I raised them as proud Israelis. It's hard to undo that mistake, you know?
Is there any way you could bring them over to Canada?
They don't want to leave their friends.
Well,
Don't forget something. They speak Hebrew. Their mentality is Israeli. They don't want their world disrupted this way. And for me to see, I know it's coming. They're setting up the whole world, but Israel's going to be hit worse than anybody.
Well, Marcus, it's my contention that there's going to be another war over the Middle East. I don't know where it's going to come from, but you know, it's very obvious that everything that's going on, the statements that are being made by the leaders of Iran, President Ahmadinejad, and the other Iranian leaders, just don't make sense. It's almost as if they're inviting a war. And then
More than that, Israeli leaders' statements make no sense. Okay, the Iranians can say whatever they want about Israel. They're not, I don't know if they're inviting or not, but Israel cannot make one statement that it's going to defend its own country against, I'm not talking atomic missiles, plain ordinary rockets from Hezbollah can destroy Israel. Why are we so full of self-confidence? Why is this Omar talking about what we can do? Those soldiers who started this war, and as you know, on your show, I showed you that most likely Israel set up those kidnappers to go to war. Neither here nor there. The fact is, they're gone. They're completely gone. You know, there was an amazing statement made by Kofi Annan. He said the biggest problem in the negotiations to get the two soldiers released from Hezbollah is Israel insisted they be returned alive. Can you believe he said that?
I can believe we live in a world gone mad. I can believe he said that. Yes, absolutely.
Holy cow, the head of the United Nations tries to blame Israel for demanding that their prisoners be returned alive?
I think that what people don't understand, they've probably forgotten that what Israel did was send a couple of tanks out, and then they left, of course. They left, as I remember, a couple of soldiers and tanks in enemy territory, and they were kidnapped. And they used that as a justification then for attacking Lebanon.
And then, of course, Giora Shalit, the whole thing was caught on camera. There was a tank commander who said, enough is enough, I'm going to use the tank and stop this kidnapping, and he was turned down. Look, there's information out there that's getting buried, and I at one time I did much more to find it. I don't believe I can do anything for Israel anymore. What can I do? Look at this position I'm in. Folks, I'm on the run. I'm a refugee. If I go back to my home, odds are very good I'll never be able to leave again. There'll be a liens put on me. I'll be arrested. I suspect they're planning things with the car crash, that I take the blame. There are all kinds of things. I spoke on the phone this morning with my friend Eve Cohen. He is going to jail. He lit a tire at a protest rally, and he is going to jail for 6 months. These are people I actually know. These are people involved in the world of dissent. We're being crushed. Our children are being taken from us. We're getting killed. That's Israel today.
People here, you know, living in the security that we live in, find it difficult to believe that this is going on in other parts of the world. But we live really in a fool's paradise here. The real world is a violent world with terrible, terrible injustice there, and tyrants who are imposing their will on the people, who make a mockery of this concept of democracy. You know, they say, you know, go to the polls and vote, but it really doesn't really matter whether you vote for the Democrats or Republicans here, or for the liberals or for the conservatives over in Israel. They're all fixed, the election over there in Iraq. In Iraq, we supposedly we're voting for democracy. People do not understand that what we did was impose upon those unfortunate people an Islamic socialist authoritarian society. A society in Iraq that our boys are fighting for think it's democracy. It is actually, if you read the Iraqi constitution, it is an authoritarian a state run by the mullahs. All law will be determined by, according to Sharia law.
Brilliant, 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 and it was known. Listen, this is something that George Bush will be sacrificed. What's the difference? It's his second term in office. There's, but usually there's a change of term to Democrats afterwards anyways. The point is they're not idiots. The Americans knew that the Shiites would win the elections in any case because they had the majority of the population, and any Democratic elections would turn Iraq into a Shiite state. You didn't have to be a genius to figure that one out. And then I loved the night of the elections where Fox, CNN, the world's media were congratulating the Americans on the great turnout, the 99% Shiite, 79% Kurd, and 12% Sunni. Okay? I mean, they couldn't figure out that the Americans just put in Iran. They put in Iran as the leaders of Iraq.
And what we've really done, of course, is create a situation where, of course, at least the Shia region of Iraq will reunite with Iran and even strengthen that. In fact, what the Shia Muslims want is a crescent that goes from Iran all the way over into Syria and over into Lebanon. People don't understand that what we're doing, of course, is creating a very, very powerful militant force over there that did not exist before the Americans intervened, toppled the Shah of Iran, brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power as a forerunner to this Islamic terrorist movement now we have to go to war to fight with.
There's no question in my mind that the Arab rulers are so thoroughly corrupt that they're playing ball with this thing. The fact remains that there's a new Middle East, there's a new world order, it's already in place, the soldiers are in place, Israel's about to go. Everything these people say they do, they go and do it. Israel is now being dismembered. I don't know if your audience cares about that. Israel is being dismembered. Okay? If you want to help save it, come and help save it somehow. I don't even know what to tell you, but Israel is not going to survive this new world order. It's going to go.
Well, I think that's always what has been intended. Of course, I fear that there's going to be a terrible, terrible war over there in the Middle East. And when that happens, there are going to be terrible repercussions here in America.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I spoke to my ex-wife. We're actually a very loving ex-wife couple, you know. We do get along. And I asked her outright. I said, please sell the house. Aren't you worried about what's going to come in the next war? And she said, why should I? They're going to nuke us. And by the way, she wasn't kidding. They're talking about Iran, and they're talking about getting nuked.
Well, I would think that she'd want to sell the house and get out of there with the children.
She's too trapped by her children. She hasn't got the strength. I haven't hinted to her yet that, yes, I'll get back together with you if need be. Come to Canada. Now, Canada is the opposite, believe me, of Israel. I told my son this story. It's a great story. I said, Ari, I was in the Vancouver Shook yesterday. That is the Vancouver market. And I said, I had to test it out. I said, I screamed at the top of my lungs, Mechablim, Mechablim. And no one did anything. I screamed, terrorists, terrorists in Hebrew. And nobody did a thing. You know, I gave me ultimate convincing act that there's no terrorism in Vancouver. It was a good try. I don't think my wife can sell the house now. And by the way, my family in Vancouver is in real estate. If there's a war, the house will be worthless. You may as well sell it now as ever.
All right, fine. Well, I certainly hope that you and your family can get together again.
Oh, I'm so worried about that.
I know you are, I think it's so important that the American people understand that the world is very unstable, and certainly it's only a matter of time before our administration goes to war with Iran. Now, there's no reason to go to war with Iran other than our government is determined to go to war with Iran. Our leaders are, and of course the Iranians, it would almost appear, are intent upon fomenting that war. And if you look at it logically, it doesn't make sense. If you look at it from the point of view that maybe there are forces working behind the scenes that we don't understand that are intent upon plunging the Middle East into a terrible, probably nuclear war.
Not just the Middle East. North Korea is all very tied up with Iran. North Korea explodes a bomb or two, supposedly, and they now have nuclear weapons. they can hand them over to Iran, which has these Zizel missiles, these Scuds that can hit Israel, and now you've got a nuclear war. Now, during the last war, please tell me, what happened to Israel's Samson option? Wasn't it stated that if Israel ever had to abandon its cities because of rockets, they would have to take out their Samson option, their nuclear weapons? Where were the nuclear weapons? What you're looking at right now is an Iran that will have at least a couple of primitive weapons, and an Israel that, as far as we know, either never developed nuclear weapons, or for some reason or another can't use them. But all we know is this, the word atomic and Israel is never used together nowadays, and I don't understand that one little bit. There's something else going on here, and I'm not sure what it is. When does Israel use its atomic option, if in fact it exists?
Well, I think the one important thing is to realize that Israel will not do anything unless they have the permission of the United States.
That's the idea,
of course, is exactly the opposite. They're putting forward the Zionists are running Washington, D.C., and I don't believe that for one minute. I believe that Israel is totally subservient to the powerful secret societies and occult organizations that are running our nation's
capital. These are the Sabbateans. These are the Council on Foreign Relations. These are the half-Jews or quarter-Jews, the Kerry's, the Albright's. These are the Sabbateans. The Sabbateans tried to build a Sabbatean society in Israel. It failed. The Israeli people became more and more religious as Israel carried on. They realized they made a mistake. Now they're going to end their mistake. They didn't get their Sabbatean state, and they'll be damned if they're responsible for creating a religious Jewish state. That's why the wars against Gush Katif and Shomron, a religious society was created there that was a model. It was an absolute model of decency for Jews elsewhere. That had to be put an end to. And that's what they are doing. They're shutting down Sabbatean Israel. They're destroying the Israeli state. And I keep telling the Jews, guys, we have met the enemy. He is here. He is us.
And I think for our listeners out there, I hope you go to the Internet and look up the Sabbateans. That they were followers of a man named Sabbati. This goes back to the 1600s. In fact, when I first heard Barry talking about this, I went to my Encyclopedia Americana, and they had a whole section on the Sabbateans, and I'd never heard of them, and believe me, I'm pretty close to what people are saying, but this was a Jewish secret organization. It's there. It's very powerful. It exists today. So
I repeat that what you've just said. In my latest book, Surprise Free Labor Zionism and the Holocaust, I repeat the main point, that Israel had one Zionism in the 30s. It had thrown out the Jabotinsky, the right-wing brand. It had only the Bolshevik brand. They were working with the Nazis. They let the Jews of Europe be slaughtered so they could get their little Israel. They have got to go, or all the Jews of the world are going to be wiped out by them.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to give us a call, if you have a question or comment, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But we hope that many of you will want to get Barry Shammas' material. It is fascinating and challenging, and certainly Barry is sincerely concerned about the fate of Israel, as I am, I think, as anybody, of course, who looks upon this as God's holy city. But it is a city that I believe history is going to revolve around. I believe we're moving into very, very difficult times. Until you understand how it all begins to fit together, until you understand we're involved in a spiritual battle, there really is another dimension. There really are demonic beings who are running so much of what's going on today. And, of course, the world, I believe, is on the verge, is on the edge of a precipice. And I hate to think what lies ahead. We're going to be back in just a moment with Barry Shammas and wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Barry, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
Good program, as usual. Look, go to IsraelNationalRadio.com. And look at the Tamar Yonah show. We have one broadcaster in all of Israel exposing the New World Order. That's Tamar Yonah. That's Israel National Radio, one word, .com. And write her. You may find that she'll write you back. Start some sort of conversation using the only reporter that we have in the entire Israeli media who is actually exposing this stuff.
All right, let's go to Kevin, who's at Austin, Texas. Kevin, you have a quick question? We're just about out of time.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Stan. I just want to say to Barry, I really appreciate him because he gives me such insight of what's going on. You know, really appreciate it. And
my pleasure.
Yeah, well, that's really, Kevin, that's the reason we have him on, because we need to get this information out. But these satanic forces are in every religion, but certainly they're devastating the Jewish religion, and the average Jew has no idea, but then the average Protestant has no idea what's going on. The average Catholic doesn't understand. The hierarchy of their church has been infiltrated as well.
Right, I go to a Baptist church, and last week the deacon invocated the great architect.
The great architect of the universe?
Yes, sir, at a Baptist church in Austin.
Well, I hope you explained to him the great architect of the universe is not the God of the Bible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's like I'm just a little guy that goes there, and you know, this is what goes on. Anyway, Barry, I'm so sorry to hear about your situation, Barry, but, you know, you're like one of the prophets of the Old Testament. You know, you're going through a hard time.
Well, I was forced to a hard time. The voice you hear, for instance, isn't my voice. It's a post-stroke, post-horrible car crash voice. You know what? If I had to live over again, I would turn on the NFL and we'd be talking the sports scores. I don't know if I'd
do
this voice.
No, Barry, don't do that, man. No, because You've suffered, and you've been damaged. You have been damaged, but you'll recover. You'll recover, and even if you're damaged, you are a channel of truth that we are hearing.
Kevin, I agree with you. We're out of time. God bless you. Thanks
okay.
very much.
God bless
for
that was very, very, very nice of you. Very useful, let me tell you.
Bye-bye, Kevin. Good night. And Barry Sammis, thank you so much for being with us, and we'll look forward to having you on again sometime real soon.
Oh, anytime you say. Thank you very much, Dr. Sam.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I hope you enjoyed our program with Barry Sammis, and I believe that Barry, has been called to do what he's doing now. Of course, he's not a deeply religious individual. He's an Israeli patriot. He loves his country and wants to see it preserved. But I believe God has called him into what he's doing, just I believe that God has called other people to do what they're doing in this battle, to try to educate the American people. We each have our part to play, and whether it's somebody who goes to a Baptist church in Austin, Texas, and hears them having their prayers to the great architect of the universe and is trying to get people to understand there, or any of our other listeners all across America, but we do have a growing audience. Your job is to get people listening to our program, to pull down our newsletters at RadioLiberty.com, and let me suggest the August and September newsletters of this year are excellent, even if I do say so. Copy them, get them distributed. Help people to understand how this all fits together. For truly, we are involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, financial, educational battlefield, and we need your help. Now, we do hope many of you will join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us. You can do that by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. We hope many of you will, of course, get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. We hope that many of you, of course, will get the other material we have. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, 4-hour, 10-hour version of the videos, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, the videos Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, the Rape of the Soul, actually put out by a good friend of ours who's Catholic, about embedded images in Catholic art, Catholic literature. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will I want to get some of the DVDs we have on what really happened on 9-1-1, because that is the weak link in the chain. If we can get the American people to know what really happened on the 11th of September 2001, and you're going to do that by the video, Terror Storm, this is a DVD, the DVD, 9-1-1, Press for the Truth, the DVD, In Plain Sight, and then, of course, the DVD or VHS, 9-1-1, The Day That Changed America Forever. And then, of course, if you doubt what happened that morning, you go up on the Internet and you type in on Google, Building 7 videos, and watch that building come down, and you realize it was a controlled demolition. And then, of course, you'll want to get our newsletters, as we simply point out, that on the morning of September 11th, there were military exercises that simulated hijacking of planes. You'll find that in the Vanity Fair magazine for September, the transcripts, the NORAD transcripts, somebody has released those tapes, and it's very obvious somebody, and I don't think it was Osama bin Laden, was implanting images on the screens at the FAA and at NORAD to confuse the people. And, of course, the commander at Langley Air Force Base refused to launch the planes when he was asked to. And, of course, when the planes were launched, the fighter planes that guard Washington, D.C., Langley is 100 miles away from Washington, D.C., but the planes were sent out over the Atlantic Ocean. And then, of course, they were not allowed to fly at full speed. And even though Langley was 100 miles away from Washington, D.C., and the planes were supposed to be going to protect Washington, D.C., they were 150 miles away at the time the Pentagon was hit. How could that happen? Well, of course, they asked the man at Langley why he didn't launch his planes, and he said, oh, well, if I'd got them up in the air, they might have run out of fuel. They might have run out of fuel. That's why we didn't, of course, put them up in the air. And if you believe that, you believe anything. I've talked to other fighter pilots who say, look, you put in a call, immediately there's a tanker plane there, and it fuels you, and then you keep right on flying, and that's what it's about. Everything has been a lie. And if they lied about what happened on 9-1-1, then Afghanistan and Iraq and the coming war with Iran, all unnecessary. Get the information, get it to other people, help us to get them informed, and then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for liberty, for our provision and our protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.